804 career wins as a coach, but he's going to remember 805, maybe more than any of them, because he has just notched, in his 33 years of coaching, his first trip to the NCAA tournament.
This is a historic night for Belmont University and in our basketball program. You know, just 48 hours ago, we didn't know if we were going to be in this, and I didn't know if these two seniors were going to ever get to play in the NCAA tournament, and now they've got Belmont's first win. So it's a big night for us.
It is a big night for Rick Byrd, and it was a big night for the Belmont Bruins. How about them Bruins, Floyd Reese?
Oh, it was a great win. They really, really played well. I mean, it was went back and forth. Would have been easy for them, if they would have listened to all the 0-7 talk, it would have been easy for them, I think, at points in time to say, here we go again, and just kind of throw it in. But they refused to do that. I mean, they played really, really well. What a great year for Rick Byrd, huh?
Oh,
get
yeah.
800 wins, and then you get your first NCAA, tournament win. I mean, this has been a giant couple of weeks for him.
And they're not done yet. I mean, if Rick Byrd goes to the Sweet 16 – which, I mean, I hate people that are like, my bracket, I got our brackets right here, Floyd. I've got Belmont going to the Sweet 16. I have Belmont beating Maryland, and then I have them beating Yale because I think LSU is just going to crumble with all the garbage that's been going on there. So I got Belmont in the Sweet 16. If Belmont gets to the Sweet 16 versus Michigan State, I mean, think about Rick Byrd took over an NAIA program with no home gym. And now they'd be playing Michigan State in the Sweet 16. I'm not saying that's going to happen.
Yeah, that'd be the kind of stuff they make movies about.
I mean, exactly. That's that's the kind of thing. But, I mean, I have two thoughts for this. Number one, what a great win for Belmont, the school. Because to your point about the 0-7, the committee, in my opinion, went out on a limb for Belmont. It would have been very easy for them to keep Belmont out of the tournament. They would, if they had put TCU in and Belmont out, even though that would have been ridiculous because TCU got walloped at home by Lipscomb, they could have said, hey, look at the quadrant one wins here. This is why NC State, is NC State's in and Belmont's not. Just look at the strength of schedule. NC State has to play Duke twice. They have to play Carolina twice. They have to play Virginia, Louisville, and who's Belmont playing? They're not playing Duke twice, that's for sure. So they could have done whatever they wanted to do to keep Belmont out. So they kind of went out on a limb and put Belmont in, kind of saying, you know what? Let's give them a chance. Let's give the little guy from the OVC a chance. We don't like giving the OVC multiple bids. But let's give the little guy a chance. And they did, and Belmont went and ran with it last night and got a win over a big guy in Temple, and they're going to get their shot over Maryland, coming up. And while Belmont wouldn't be the first Cinderella team to reach a Sweet 16, Florida Gulf Coast did it, a handful of years ago. A bunch of other teams do it. Every year it feels like there's one Cinderella mm-hmm. who gets in there. I just wonder, because Belmont is an at-large, if this, in a 68-team tournament, is going to mean more for the little guys of the world going forward in future years because Belmont won a game in the first four. And let's not forget VCU. The first year, I believe, of the 68-team tournament, VCU went from the first four to the final four. So if we're using that, I'm not sure VCU or Butler in years previous has really done anything to help the little guy out more. But I wonder if maybe Belmont and their win and their ascension from an NAIA program to a team that everybody respects right now, if that will help the little guy out in future years, what they're doing right now.
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I don't know that it would, but I don't know that it wouldn't. I think there are so many parameters that they use to determine who gets in, so many different levels of production that you have to meet, and then it gets to things like geography at points in time. That's a little bit much for me. I understand why they do it, and I can appreciate it, but I mean, at some point in time, you got to draw a line. I mean, I think this is just great for Belmont. I mean, who was Harley Dickerson or somebody won last night, too?
Farley, who is it? They played a 16 seed.
Well, yeah, but they still won. I mean, small school win.
I know, but they played Prairie View A&M in the 16 game.
There you go. There's there's another small school, Prairie
right,
View
but,
A&M.
But the 16 games, that no, the reason they have to play the 2-11 games with the 2-16 games is because nobody would watch if they just played the 16 games. The 16 seeds are – now, I'm not like some other Hall of Fame radio host who's going to say a 16 seed has never beaten a 1 seed before because a 16 seed did beat a 1 seed last year. But the 16 seeds are – you know, that is not a little guy winning in the NCAA tournament. Like Belmont winning an 11 game is like a little guy winning in the NCAA tournament. Because they beat another 16.
Right. But in my mind, it's another small school is winning. And if we're going to pursue the fact that small schools win is going to help the group, then I think there's an example of it.
I know, but beating a 16 seed small school Prairie View A&M is not going to help another little guy ever get in as an at-large, whereas Belmont, a little guy as an at-large, gets in and beats another at-large, gives you kind of an argument that, hey, that maybe the Lipscombs of the world who did all they can but win their conference tournament should maybe be in the discussion going forward.
Yeah, I don't know.
Beating Prairie View in a 16 game is not going to ever get anybody to ever change their mind one way or another.
Well, I mean, there are people out there now that are saying the game, the win they had last night was nothing.
The Belmont one?
Yeah.
I know.
So, I mean, you know,
you
can argue
that line of thinking?
You can argue that one way or the other.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that think that this doesn't even count
as
an NCAA tournament
win.
Because it's a...
And I mean, you can argue it. You can find reason to argue it anyway.
Well, think about this, though. Like, if you're Belmont, and we talk about Rick Byrd being 0-7, that's 0-7 against 2 seeds and 1 seeds and 3 seeds. That's not being 0-7 against an 11 seed. Last night, they played an 11 seed. They're going to play a 6 seed in this upcoming game. They've never played teams this bad in the NCAA tournament because they're always playing UCLA or Georgetown or Duke.
Which I think is – I'm not sure that's an argument for letting the small schools in. Small schools playing bad schools to see who advances. That's what does that do for you?
So you look at like MTSU knocking off Michigan State.
I want to see, yeah. When
as
you
that
see
being
that,
the reason why that we're talking.
Now
for...
we're talking. Now you can come and talk to me. But to say, okay, we're going to bring in a couple of little schools and let them bang at each other and whoever wins advances. I mean, you know what? You're looking at it going, okay, great. You know, why we need to cut the number of teams in the tournament.
Well, I
make
would
it
agree
smaller.
That they need to cut the number of teams in the tournament anyway. I mean, we can go with 32 and be fine.
Yeah.
But I still wonder, I just wonder, was Belmont's win last night good for just Belmont? Or was that good for all of the little guys in college basketball? All of the people that Dick Vitale cries for on TV. And he cries. I mean, he will cry. So
that is kind of nice, though. To have a nationally known telecaster
Dickie
kind
V?
Of fighting for the down the road guys.
You don't even like Dickie V.
I don't, but it's still nice to have somebody that's I mean, if you go out and talk basketball and you mention Dickie V, everybody in the world knows who you're talking about.
I know, but if Dickie V is fighting on your side, that may be a bad thing.
Yeah, that may be a negative too. Side. Yeah, that's right.
But I would agree with you. You know, for Dickie V to be fighting for Lipscomb, for Dickie V to be fighting for those guys, it's a good thing. Again, I just wonder, is the Belmont win good for just Belmont? Which it is great for Belmont. I don't think there's any doubt that Belmont winning a game on national TV in the NCAA tournament and now getting to go play another game in which they could win that. I mean, if they get a Sweet 16, which again, I do not think is out of the realm of possibility. If Belmont gets to the Sweet 16, that would be so tremendous for that school. And if Belmont does get to that Sweet 16, and I think there's a legit chance they do. If Belmont gets there, I think it's huge for the OVC. I think it's huge for, you know, all the little guys in college basketball. But you can also make an argument that Butler's been to national championship games. VCU's been to a Final Four. Loyola Chicago last year went to the Final Four. And how much did Loyola Chicago going to the Final Four do for the little guy in college basketball this year? You know, Lipscomb still not in. UNC Greensboro still not in. So it's hard for me to argue that Belmont's win was good for more than just Belmont. But I kind of feel like because they were an at-large team, unlike these other automatic qualifiers, that you can at least make the argument that maybe the committee in the future will consider more little guy at-large teams. And if Belmont can do that, then I think that would make Rick Byrd happier than anything that he's accomplished, you know, up until this point, or one of the best things that he could have accomplished. So let's take your phones, your thoughts, and here's the question. Belmont's win last night. One, what did you think about it? And two, was it a win for just Belmont? Or was it a win for all the little guys out there in college basketball? 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Plus, what kind of street cred did Belmont earn for winning last night? Is it transferable to the future? Does it matter? We'll get to that coming up next. It's Jared and the GM right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
I think Belmont is one of those teams that's really hard to guard. And we talk about teams that are efficient at the offensive end of the floor. This is a team that averages about 19 to 20 assists per game. So when you space the floor and you cut and move, and they've got multiple guys that can score it. You know, they lost to Murray State in the OVC championship game. And a big part of that was Nick Mazinski. He was injured with a left ankle injury, missed that game. Came back tonight, had 16 points. He provides that interior presence. Dylan Windler didn't play well, but they were still able to win because, again, it's not about the individual. It's about the collection of the parts. And this is why Rick Byrd consistently has had Belmont as one of the best mid-major programs in college basketball.
That was Sean Farnham on SportsCenter last night. Rick Byrd was on SportsCenter last night. Floyd, how much does that matter to a program like a Belmont in terms of recruiting to have guys like Sean Farnham on ESPN
talking gigantic about
you, breaking you down?
Oh, it's gigantic. It's like we were talking yesterday with Bill Belichick wearing the Alabama shirt. I mean, that'll be in every recruiting poster sent to every recruit in the country. And I think for a team like Belmont, things like this are gigantic. That's why this win is gigantic. Things like this, you know, you can use as recruiting, and you can use it not only for recruiting now, but, you know, it's worth a couple of years. How, you know, it's like MTSU, how long they rode that Michigan State win. I mean, that helps you down the line. It helps your reputation. It helps everything about the program, and really helps everything about the school. Gives the school a little clout now. You know, we go out there and they'll say, we've got so many Rhodes Scholars and we've got the, and we, you know, we've got wins in NC2A basketball. I mean, we're a legit program.
Well, you've seen the Nick Saban effect on Alabama. Like, if you look at test scores across the board for Alabama, the average ACT test score, and I'm shooting off the hip here with the numbers, but it was something like this. It was something like 22 in order to get into Alabama in 2007. And right now, I think it's like 29. Like, that the ACT score has risen 7 points because of Nick Saban. Like, that
the success of the football program
they want to
be a part of it.
Has led to all these people wanting to be there. Not to say that Belmont being talked about on SportsCenter equates to Alabama football. We know that it doesn't. But I just think that they certainly gained some street cred with their win last night. And they're going to be a team that I think a lot of people are going to enjoy watching when they play Maryland and maybe some of these other games if they keep it going past that. I just wonder, you know, the thing that I took away from last night's game, Belmont is a good team. They are a fun team to watch. They are a good team. They shoot the ball well. They got a big man. They got fundamentals. I tweeted this out last night. I feel like when they miss a free throw, a little bit of Rick Byrd dies inside every time they miss a free throw.
Well, like, and they had, that much. You know, Dylan, whatever his last name is, I want to say Whitaker, but that's not right. Anyway, he's their, like, ace, and he didn't play well at all. That's why it was so good to have, you know, so many other players stand up, including the young center, and find a way to go out and, what did he score, 16, I think. I think he had eight.
Oh, the big guy?
Yeah.
Could not,
like,
stop him.
8 for 14 or something like that.
Mizuski or whatever. Could not stop him. Yeah. Could not stop him. The big man. I'm sitting there watching the game last night like, give him the ball, Rick. Let him go to work. They could not stop him last night. Now, Maryland's got much bigger players, and that's going to be a little bit of an issue. But if Belmont shoots the ball, I got a feeling they're going to hang around in this tournament a lot longer than the average person thinks they're going to. That and Dan Wolken. Dan Wolken, man, he is a hater.
That's the true definition of a hater right there. And I don't know what it is. I mean, he's got some kind of beef. I don't know what the deal is.
I think that his beef stems back to all the Tennessee fans, because I just got the vibe. Now, we've interviewed him once. I got the vibe being around him that he's like kind of sensitive, you know, like kind of sensitive and maybe a little uppity. You know, I don't know if you can still use that word these days. So if you can, I'm sorry. But I feel like that's kind of, you know, the vibe just from being around him. I remember I asked him a question about the John Curry text or whatever. He's like, I don't reveal my sources. My sources. I'm like, okay, easy there. Easy there, Johnny. But I think that he was so upset about that, that he is just kind of, now he's taking it out on Belmont because he's mad at everything that has to do with the entire state of
Texas. Well, yeah, he didn't think Belmont should be there, one. And then after they won, it was, well, that's not even considered a NC2A, you know, bracket game. So, I mean, he went as far. It'd be interesting if they beat Maryland. It'd be interesting to see where he goes from there.
Okay, phones, we go on Belmont. And I'm not knocking Belmont, but we just don't usually take calls on Belmont. So get them in, 615-737-1025. Julio is up next on Belmont. Thank you for calling. What's up, Julio?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you again. My only question is, let's say Rick Bird gets these guys to the Sweet 16 this year. Next season, Vanderbilt struggles as they did this year. What would you think the chances of getting Rick Bird to stay in Nashville and take a step up to the SEC, take over at Vanderbilt with Malcolm Turner, you know, the G League guy? I think he'd be the guy to convince Rick Bird to step up to the SEC. Anyway, good to talk to you guys.
So, like, I don't know anything about Malcolm Turner. Thank you, Julio. I don't know anything about Malcolm Turner. I've talked to some people in the Vanderbilt athletic department that have told me this. They think Malcolm Turner comes off as very relatable, but they think that he is on a mission to change the way people view Vanderbilt. Now, again, I'm going to need to see that.
Good luck.
Before I believe that. I mean, I'd like to have an 8-pack. Yeah, hey, Jared Stillman is going to go out there and get himself an 8-pack. Well, like, you need to see my 8-pack before you believe that I would have an 8-pack.
Yeah.
I got to feel the same way about Vanderbilt. I mean, I think Rick Bird is kind of – this is my opinion. I think Rick Bird is kind of done with taking offers elsewhere. I think he's pretty much set. I think he's good to go. And now, would Vanderbilt could be the one school maybe, only because, like, he wouldn't have to move and all of that kind of stuff. But I really get the vibe that Rick Bird is good to go, and Rick Bird is happy, and Rick Bird is set and ready to rock and roll for the rest of his career.
He's had opportunities to go other places, bigger schools. I'm not sure. I don't want to see an SEC school, but it easily could have been
an
SEC school.
Well, he wanted the Tennessee job, I think, when Konzo got it. I think he was interested in the Tennessee job. And then when it came open again after the Donnie Tindall mess, he was like, nah, I'm good, no interest.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's had a chance. I think, you know, I think if there were questions about him, I'm not sure that there are many questions about his basketball prowess, although there could be. I just don't know that. But I think the recruiting, you know, issue was one that people were wondering about. And so I don't know. It'd be interesting. But, man, he's also, what is he, 65 or
65.
Something we said? So, you know what? I mean, he's probably got a great job. People there love him. He loves what he's doing, enjoys going to work every day. And at 65, there's probably something that's really comforting about that.
Well, it's like with Cameron Neubauer, who was the women's coach over there, who's now at Florida. He's been at Florida for 2 years. He's making a lot of money at Florida. He's had two really tough seasons at Florida. How many tough seasons, even in women's basketball, do you get at Florida before there are no more tough seasons?
I'd say you're done.
Okay.
You've had two.
So he was at Belmont killing it. Belmont, even with his players, they've gone to the NCAA tournament twice now. He could have been at Belmont for the rest of his life. And it's like, if you've got a wife and a couple kids and you're making nice cash and you live in the Belmont area, are you sure you want to go take that jump to go make the $2 million a year at LSU, knowing that you could be at LSU for 3 years and then be on your rear end? Or do you just say, you know what? I like what I'm doing at Belmont. I'm making a nice chunk of change. Everybody likes me. I like them. I'm just going to do this for the rest of my life and live in Nashville. And I'm okay with either thought process.
Sure, I am too. And there are those that go both ways. There are those that say, you know what? I want to go big time. I want to win the NCAA championship. I want to go coach in the NBA. I want to whatever it may be. And I understand that, both from an ego standpoint and from the financial standpoint. You know, I mean, the money is, there's got to be all the difference in the world in the money. But then there are those guys that, that look at it and say, you know what? My kids love it here. They go to a great school. I love it here. I love what I'm doing. And we're doing okay. And they're good with okay. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Let's go to Chris, who's up next on Belmont. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, first of all, appreciate you guys talking about Belmont and giving them some love. Love to hear a little more talk about some of the local schools, but understand, you know, it's Titans and Preds first here, but awesome to see them get the publicity. Kind of to your original question, I think, does this help, you know, the little guys long-term? I think one thing you haven't brought up is new NET rankings that they've put out this year. So there is a new system for kind of evaluating teams getting into the tournament, and Stanford's athletic director, Bernard Muir, he's kind of come out and been the vocal piece for it this year. And I think, you know, we did nothing but help ourselves with how we represented Nashville and Belmont last night. So I think it's great for the sport. I think that's what people look for this time of year is, you know, the traditionally smaller schools that can go down and take on a team and a Power Five and beat them. And, you know, I'd rather see Belmont at 26-5 take on somebody and make a run versus, you know, a 16-15 Texas team or whatever they are. So anyway, thanks for talking about Belmont, guys. Yep. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Chris.
Chris. I mean, a 16-16 team has no business in the tournament. I'm sorry. Like, unless you won your conference tournament, you know, and ran the table and did something, you have no business in the tournament. That's my take, regardless of what your RPI, NET, NCG
ranking
is.
What is NET? What is that?
Who cares? I mean, you know these guys sit in the room and they're like, ah, them. You know, like, you know that. But it just, like, for me, I like the little guy getting in there. That being said, TV ratings will tell you, generally speaking, that they'd rather have the big guy in there.
I'm sure.
The TV ratings are telling you, like, hey, they, and every now and then, like, Boise State will get, you know, they'll earn the shot in football to go up against a good team, and you'll watch it. UCF, one of those teams will earn their shot, but it's not the same as Alabama. Right. And that's the thing people have a hard time understanding. Michael is up next on Belmont here. Thank you for calling. What's up, Michael?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good, go ahead.
Love your show.
Thank you.
So, I mean, Belmont, I thought y'all recently talked about the coach that may possibly, you know, have a job offer at LSU. That was – so why would somebody leave Nashville? Like you were saying, it's a great area. First of all, you know, he could – retire here, and the Belmont has kind of been a pretty decent team for quite some time. They're not like a nobody team. They make it to the tournament quite often, you know. But
would you leave Vanderbilt to go coach football at LSU?
No, I'm not that dumb. First of all, plenty of money in Vanderbilt. I mean, there's one guy named Cornelius. I think he built the school, but I don't know.
So you would not leave Vandy football to go coach LSU football?
No, you said football. I thought we were talking about basketball.
Yeah, I'm talking football. I'm talking about football.
I'm not a very big fan of Cajun because I'm an Alabama fan, Roll Tide. But
yes, you would leave Vanderbilt to go coach LSU. Thank you for your call. The reason that you would leave Vanderbilt to go coach LSU is because at LSU, they'll give you every resource to win a national championship, and they'll give you about $4 million a year. Vanderbilt, from what I've been told, is not willing to do either. No offense to Belmont. Belmont is what it is, and the best part about Belmont, in my opinion, is that they never try to be what they're not. And Belmont knows they're not going to be able to build you a $50 million practice facility for basketball. They're just not going to do that. Right. And Rick Byrd, you know, probably has never asked for that, but LSU will. I mean, that's the LSU, and I'm just using them as an example because you know they're going to be looking for a coach soon. Like, those schools will. And that's the difference. So if your ego is, I want to go win the championship, then you want to go to a bigger school. If your ego is, hey, I can make $4 million a year in Louisiana as opposed to $700,000. And I have no idea how much Rick Bird makes at Belmont. So he could be making $1 million. I have no idea. But I'd rather make $4 million in Louisiana than $700,000 in Nashville. Mm-hmm. I get it. You do that for one contract, that's $16 million. You come back to Nashville, do whatever you want with all your money. So I think that we have to be realistic in that regard.
Sure. And those are the things that I think these people weigh. Of course, the guys, I mean, and you know this when you meet a bunch of these guys, you know, there are the guys that, you know, are just not going to be content. You know, they want the big time. They want the big money. They want the splash. They want, and they don't necessarily look at the downside. They don't necessarily look at getting fired, and they don't necessarily look at your kids going to school and being called names because of, you know, you can't win a game kind of thing. I mean, that's just not a big deal to them. And then there's those others where that's the most important thing in the world. And so they can have their money and they can have their prestige. And I respect both of them. I understand both of them.
Speaking of money and prestige, Pecorine has those, right?
Yes.
He got a lot of both.
Yes, he does.
He's got a lot of both. What about his shutout performance last night? We've been worried about him. What about his performance?
Whoa. Don't give me that wee stuff.
I'm talking about me and the
callers.
You
got a mouse in your pocket?
We've been worried about him. Pekka with the shutout of Toronto. We'll get to that next. Jaron the GM. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Toronto will drop their fourth out of the last five. They'll head to Buffalo to play the Sabres. 7 seconds to go. And Pecorine is going to have two shutouts against the second most potent offense in the NHL.
What do we think about that, Floyd? A shutout for Pecorine. Now, I'll be honest. Some of us had been worried about Pekka's recent performances, especially in comparison to Saros. Was last night's performance against Toronto all we needed to see to feel, okay, Pekka's ready to go? Shuts out the second best scoring team in the league. And I do believe that in their two wins over Tampa Bay, albeit in November, he shut them down too. So he shut down Toronto. He shut down Tampa Bay. And here he is. Was last night's shutout good enough for you to kind of quash any concerns you may have had about Pecorine?
Well, I think you need to answer that question. I think we know my answer. What are you going to say?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Amazing.
I don't know. It's only one game.
Ah.
But he was stellar last night. That one save he made in the third period was unbelievable. No, I think, it was the third period. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Where and he laid out?
Oh, yeah. Saved it like three times. To me, this is what I think is happening. Is I don't think Pekka listens to any outside noise. So the fans that call the show and, you know, the discussions that we've had about Pekka, and I don't think Pekka pays an ounce of attention to anything outside of his own game. I don't think he cares. I just don't think it matters to him. You know what I mean? Like a true right. professional. I don't think that it matters to Pekka one iota. And I believe Pekka has not been happy with how he's playing. Like, I think that he'll be the first to tell you that. Although he'll go out there and shut him out and he'll say he's not happy with how he's playing. So he's always not happy with how he's playing. But I believe that Pekka kind of has a routine inside of himself for how he gets ready for the playoffs. And I talked to him about this a couple years ago when he kind of had a down middle of the season and he was talking about how you got to know the right things mentally to get ready for the playoffs. And so I know Pekka's got this way about him to make sure that he's ready for the playoffs. Last year, I think probably what threw him off more than anything else was the fact that everybody in the country was talking about Pekka's the best goalie, Pekka's finally going to win the Vezina, Pekka's this, and you had the whole push from the organization about Pekka to win the Vezina and all of that. And I think maybe that caught up in him every night where the pressure was on to go out there and put together a solid performance because he wanted to win a Vezina once in his career, and you're 35 years old at that point. And you never know if you're ever going to get another chance to win the Vezina. So I get Pekka wanting to kind of maybe focus in on that each and every night. This year, the Vezina is not a discussion. So he can kind of do his annual routine to make sure that he's ready to go for the playoffs. And I think that's what maybe we're seeing. And maybe it's optimistic talk as far as Pekka is concerned, but that he's got the ability to kind of feel himself out and say, okay, now I'm ready to get ready for the playoffs. And maybe last night was the first game where Pekka was like, okay, it's time for me to get into playoff mode.
You could be right. I don't know. I would say this now. I think most mature pro athletes have a very regimented lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that includes, you know, food, sleep, nutrition, masseuse, whatever, weightlifting, whatever it is your routine is. And they're pretty good about staying with it. I mean, it's not by accident that they're able to play when they're, you know, 34, 35, 36, up in years. So I'm sure he has some kind of a routine, and I'm sure he's a real stickler about it, you know, just judging from the way he looks and the way he practices and the way he plays. And let's face it,
and
now, if you're a goalie, I mean, the number of contortions and stretches and reaches and things you get into on that ice, if you are not finely tuned, I mean, your body starts snapping like a rubber band, you know. Pretty soon you have no hamstrings, you have no glutes, you have no – there's nothing there because that they slip around on that ice and get spread eagle like the one that he made the save on. That was unbelievable.
Now, here's the other part.
Contortionist.
Here's the other part. How much of his performance last night do you think was – he saw what Saros did Saturday against San Jose. And it's like, okay, he's going to go out there and do it. Now I'm going to go one-up him. Because I've heard like John Smoltz and Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux talk about how, well, if John Smoltz went out there and went seven innings and gave up one run, then I wanted to go eight innings the next day. And that it wasn't like that they were, you know, it wasn't like they were competing against each other in spite, but they were just competitive and they were like, hey, if you're going to go seven innings and give up three runs, I want to go eight innings and give up one run. Or if you're going to throw a complete game, then I want to throw a complete game. And how much of it was, hey, Saros balled out Saturday night against San Jose. It was a great team. I need to ball out tonight against Toronto. You think there's a little bit of that?
I have no clue. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know. Yeah, I know they're really, really good friends.
And what if the other part of it is Pekka's getting worried that Saros might take his job and says, okay, I need to go out there and I need to put together some great performances down the stretch so that Peter does not even get the inkling of thought to make a move with Saros in my spot. You think there's any chance that happened?
I have no clue. I mean, I have no clue. That's wild, wild speculation.
All of it or just that?
All of it.
That's what sports talk radio is. It's speculation.
Ah, okay.
And I'm speculating all the above. I think he saw what Saros did the other night and said, you know what, I got to go one-up it, or I got to go, you know, go do my thing. I think he knows Saros has been great, and he has not been. And I think he's just getting himself ready for the playoffs. I think all three went into that. And the other part to not forget, they went out there and they played defense last night as a team. There was a conscious decision to play tight D-zone coverage, and they did it, and that made a world of difference as well. So let's take your calls. Your thoughts on Pekka's performance last night. If you were someone that was a little concerned about Pekka, and please stop hitting the table while I'm talking right now because like people hear like the bongo drums going on. In the
can
background.
They hear it?
Yeah.
No.
Well, I can hear it.
Can you hear it, Ian?
I couldn't hear it very well that time.
You could hear it. You could hear it. He heard it. 615-737-1025. Again, your thoughts on Pekka's performance last night. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. It is better than when you click that pin that one day, just constantly, as like I'm sitting there talking. That's a pencil, and you can't click it like that. But I was sitting there one day talking. I was here. Like just Floyd clicking the pen. And I was about to, you know, I was just driving me crazy. But anywho, I digress. What did you think of Pekka's performance? 615-737-1025. Right to the phones next. Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 1025 The Game. And we are streaming, of course, on that Game Nashville app. ESPN 94.9 Game 2 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listening Sunday as Nashville SC takes on New York Red Bulls 2. In New York, pregame 11:45, kickoff at noon, only on ESPN 94.9 Game 2, powered by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Now puck in the Toronto zone. They're able to bust out up the right wing side. Here they come. Zach Hyman right in front. Tip by Rinne. Rebound! And what a save! Pekka Rinne on the rebound follow-up. I don't believe what I just saw. Incredible.
Just a pretty, pretty traditional three-on-two. The white guy took a shot and made a right pad save and rebound is right there for Tavares. And, you know, I just knew that I got to get something over there. And it's desperation. Just threw my hand and my leg up there and happened to hit me. So, to be honest with you. So, it's, but yeah, obviously that felt good. It was a big save at the time. I think it was a 1-0 game at the time. So it ended up being a big save at the time.
You think it was a big save, Pekka?
You can see why the players love him. I'm going to tell you why not. He is the best.
You make an unbelievable, acrobatic, amazing save. I think it was a big save at the time.
Well, how he describes it, he goes, they're coming down on me in a rather traditional 3-on-2. And I think, what's traditional about 3-on-2? And then I knew they rebounded and I could see. And so I just threw my hand and leg out there and luckily it hit me.
By the way, you know who Hal Gill, and we'll give the phones just 1 second. You know who Hal Gill's starting to remind me of?
Who?
You remember Pat Ryan when he used to call the games with Mike Keith? He used to call the Titans games. And Mike Keith would try, you know, he'd be trying to call a play. And you'd hear Pat Ryan, oh, no, in the background or something like that. I mean, it sounded good on the Music City Miracle call. You know, with the, he's got something, he's got it. You know, that sounded, I mean, I'm listening to all these highlights. Hal's talking to the Hal. Let him call the play, please.
Post. When Johansson hit the post, he yelled. It was funny.
Can you pull up the Brian Boyle goal last night? I'm sitting there like, Hal, let him call the goal. Like, you're ruining it for the people listening in the cars because they're driving their cars. And it's like, Forsberg sends it to Overton. He shoots. And all of a sudden, you're, whoa. It's like, Hal, we're trying to see if he scored or not. Play the clip.
Fed over to Ryan Ellis. He keeps it in deep into the right corner for Craig Smith. 15-20 to go in the first period. No score. Here's a turnover out high. Boyle, pump fakes, gets it back. He scores! Man.
Hal, let him talk. Let him talk. That's all I got. He's got that Pat Ryan thing going on. You know what I mean?
I didn't. I never heard those games when Pat Ryan was doing it.
Why? Because you were too busy GMing?
Because we were working.
Because you were GMing?
Yeah.
Well, Pat Ryan. And I love Pat Ryan. I don't want anyone. And I think Hal does an okay job. But I don't want anyone out there to tell Hal that I think he does a good job. I want Hal to think that I think that he does a bad job.
You want
but
him
I
to
think Hal does a good job.
You want him to think? I want him to think that I think he does a good job.
No, I want him to think that I think he does a bad job so that he'll feel like he's got to be on his toes. But deep down inside, I think he does a good job. So I just don't want anyone out there to spill the beans and tell him that I think he does a good job. Let's go to Kevin, who's up next here on Jared and the GM on the Predators. Thank you for calling. What's up, Kevin?
What's up, fellas? What a beautiful day it is today.
Amen.
I'm getting ready to go hit the tennis balls with the White House girls.
That's great, Kevin. We don't care. Get to the point, please.
Yeah, you do. Jared, you got to eat some crow today, buddy. I love you guys, but you were bad yesterday, beating up Pekka, beating up number 11, beating up, and they all scored. Everybody scored. Pekka,
I like Brian Boyle. What did I say about Brian Boyle?
We were talking about the trade, and it was a bad trade, and yeah. Come on. Show him some love, baby. Come on.
So here's the thing. First and foremost, thank you for your call. Yes, on all fronts, I would say, number one, I have never advocated that Pekka Rinne not play in the playoffs. I simply present the devil's advocate side of the case to Floyd when we know that Floyd is, Pekka's my guy. I'm sticking with Pekka. And I'm like, okay, I agree, but... And then I give the other side of it. As far as, like, Wayne Simmons scored yesterday, and we went and talked
at
length.
It's interesting how this changes in 24 hours.
That's not true.
I just give the other side
of it. Ian, have I ever said that Pekka should not start in the playoffs?
I don't think you've quite said it that
Two years ago, I was all about put Saros in there in the playoffs. I'm not there yet. And so just every game that Saros goes out there and dominates – you have to think to yourself, like, wow, you know, maybe he's making him think about it a little bit. He's making me think about it a little bit, but I'm not there yet. And then, as far as the trade guys, I just read Greg Wyshynski's article about Wayne Simmons. I didn't say Wayne Simmons was doing a bad job. And I was happy when Wayne Simmons scored. In fact, when Wayne Simmons scored, I tweeted out, that was a take that Wyshynski goal from Wayne Simmons after Greg Wyshynski called him the most disappointing trade deadline acquisition so far. So I'm not eating any crow right here. I'll eat it when I need to eat it. I'm not eating it right now. Let's go to Charlie, who's up next. What you got, Charlie, on Pecorine?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Great performance from Pekka. Love seeing it. And I think he's ready to get into the playoffs. But I think the rest of the guys, they are obligated, I think, this year to win Pekka a cup, because if it doesn't happen this year, I don't think it's going to happen. I just think the time is right, and he's kind of past his prime. So if it doesn't happen now, it's not going to happen at all. And as far as the calls with people talking over each other thing, I just wanted to put my two cents in on that. I think it added a lot to the Music City Miracle call, and I like it in certain circumstances. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Do you like Hal's doing it there?
I didn't hear that particular call live, so I can't really say. But from what I heard, it kind of muffled it. So I'm going to say no.
Thank you. No. Hal does a great job. Thank you, Charlie. What was his first part of his call? Oh, it was about them winning Pekka a cup. That's not how this works. Like, it's not like, all right, guys, we really need to go win it for Pekka, so let's try our hardest to go win it for him. Number one, if they're going to win a cup, I think a lot of it's going to be because of him, not for him. And number two, they're going to try to win the cup. The question is, are they going to be able to win the cup?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt but that they're, you know, that's their intentions, and that's our intentions.
But they're not sitting there saying, let's go win it for him, and let's, like, that's not the motivating factor to play.
Oh, no, but I would say this. If they did, I think he would be mobbed. You know, people would be just elated for him. But you're right. They don't say, hey, let's go win one for Pekka. It's kind of like, let's go out and win, period.
Could you imagine how little he'd talk about himself if they won the cup?
Yeah, everybody else would spend a lot of time talking about him.
That's the truth. Chris is up next. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. I know you guys are up against it, so I'll try to be quick on this one. You asked if I was excited about Pekka's play. I'm more encouraged about our goaltending than I was last week. But I will say this. Watching the game last night, we did a good job of limiting scoring chances. Toronto only had 22 shots on net. We were basically in implementing a 1-3-1 forecheck, and I'm using the term forecheck very lightly. I didn't see us go inside their blue line on a hard forecheck very often last night. And maybe, you know, that was the game plan. Let's let them come to us in the neutral zone and take away that from them. We limited scoring chances by Matthews, although we had a couple great moves, and Tavares did too. But so I think I'm just more encouraged about the team defense. But if this becomes the New Jersey Devils of the 90s where we're playing a neutral zone trap, yes, you win cups that way, but you play boring hockey. So that's the sacrifice you make. We had only 20 shots on net yesterday. So I'm hoping if this is the style that we're going to play, that the team adapts to that now. We've got bigger players. We can play the body. Just wondering if you're seeing the same thing that I'm seeing.
Floyd, do you care at all if the Predators play boring hockey but still win?
As long as they win, they can do anything they want.
Who cares?
I'm good with it all.
I'm sorry. I don't give a rat's tail if the Predators play boring hockey. That's exactly what they did to Chicago 2 years ago, was they trap, and Chicago cried like a bunch of babies after that series was over. And I remember, I think it was Patrick Kane or somebody like that said, I mean, if that's how you want to win, fine. I'm like, I don't care. I mean, I do not care. And that's like how I feel about the NFL. We want a dynamic offense. We want to throw the ball. We want to, I don't care. I don't care. If you want to outscore everybody and you want to win 65-60, fine. Don't care. You want to play defense and you want to win 9-3, I don't care. Just go win. That's all I care about. So who cares? I mean, about, you know, it's boring hockey to watch them trap in the neutral zone, and it's Don't care.
I thought they did do a great job in a neutral zone, though. I
mean, much better than they have been doing.
Yeah, I mean, it was outstanding.
What they could not do was they could not, and they knew this, they could not let Toronto get out there and skate because they couldn't outskate them. So you can't just let them just go up and down your ice or else they're going to put the puck in the back of the net. There's nothing he can do about it. 615-737-1025. Great win for the Predators. Okay, Floyd, get your list out. Free agency is essentially over in the NFL. The Titans have made all their big additions. So, what does the GM do now going into the draft? What are the needs? What do the Titans need to look for? What's still out there? We'll get to that. Floyd's assessment of the needs of the Titans now that free agency is over. Plus, we'll take a look at Alabama's Pro Day. Are there any Alabama guys the Titans should take a look at? Ohio State Pro Day was today. We'll get into some of that. Jared and the GM, speaking of the Preds, join Nick, Kale, and Nash at Walmart in Mount Juliet at 300 Pleasant Grove Road on Saturday from 1 to 2. We'll be giving away 10 pairs of tickets, a pair of tickets every 5 minutes, 5 pairs to see the Preds and the Blackhawks, and 5 pairs to see the Preds and Canucks at Bridgestone Arena. You must be present to win. Dr. Pepper is promoting the new edition of the Preds logo on their cans, so stop by and buy a 9-pack of Dr. Pepper. That's Nick Kale at the Walmart in Mount Juliet, 300 Pleasant Grove Road on Saturday from 1 to 2. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.